Well, welcome to our bonus call with Marian Webster and Guru Tej. We are going to have a blast here. Let me introduce Marian. I'm going to introduce her in the context of this, and I'm going to say, you know, if you want to know about Marian Webster, go to marianwebster.com. She did what I did and made it easy for you. And it's M-A-R-Y-A-M, Webster, W-E-B-S-T-E-R. And she does a lot of really wonderful things. But what we're going to talk about today that she really knows about is how not to beat yourself up when you fall off the wagon, whatever that wagon is. You know, if it's a weight loss program, if it's a meditation, if it's, I remember one time hearing this wonderful, beautiful connection between a Buddhist monk and this very well-known author talking about how they had not meditated for a year and that they both wanted to get back into it. And I was like, really? And it's so this is the permission. So Marian has gone through so many things in this lifetime. She's lived many lifetimes. She's put on tons of weight. She's taken it off. She's in the process of taking more off. She's been laid out flat. And she's come back to life, you know, with magic. And I think the most important thing that we're going to share today is that we're really going to talk about that thing. So I want to introduce Marian Webster to you and say she and I have now been playing in a realm together and many things on her birthday bash and then the heart thing, and she's been on another one of my calls on this. And this whole call is about wisdom and about how not to beat up on yourself. So welcome so much, Marian, and thank you so much for being here and being willing to share what you've gone through to give people real hope. Yes?
And for people who didn't get that, that's an M as in Michael on the end of my name. Just so they know, it's an M-A-R-Y-A-M, Webster.com. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do this call because the one thing, I've been somebody who grew up with, I think, pretty much a prototypical mom. I just turned 51, so I was born in the 1960, and I grew up with typical mom of the period on every diet possible, doing the, I don't know if anybody else remembers this, the Air Force Exercises Manual from the Royal Canadian Air Force, and, you know, we went through that together, even at a tiny age when I had no fat on me whatsoever, And so, you know, I grew up very aware as you know, I don't think that's changed any, that we're very, very aware of weight and a woman's womanliness. I was told and acculturated that it was part of my womanliness to keep my weight under control. And if I allowed myself, quote unquote, allowed myself, that was the language of the period, to become fat and to become, quote unquote, slovenly and disgusting, then I was not doing my duty as a woman. So into the whole mix of whatever medical conditions people might have or whatever reason, other reasons, emotional conditions that we have for gaining weight, there was the added, I think there's the added message to women that when you become large, you're no longer womanly. So I'd like to bust that myth right out. And if anybody listening to this call has that impression, would you be willing to uncreate, dissolve, and release that now? And just let that flow out on your breath, that old information that's no longer useful or fitting. It does not fit the size that we are at any size. And knowing that the size that you are at any size is completely perfect. Now, I want to give you a little bit of background about me, because these calls go so fast, don't they? They're so fun. They go so fast, and there's never enough time to talk about stuff. But I was basically a chunky teen, a chunky young woman, but I got a lot of dates because I had huge boobs. So, you know, the chunky played out in my favor there.
Yeah. And me, on the other hand, was just the opposite. I felt like I came back to sixth grade and thought that wait a minute, I didn't get the message to grow breasts over the summer. Oh God.
Yeah, and there's all ends of the spectrum, and again, I just want to say that you're beautiful and perfect wherever on that spectrum you fall. So for me personally, it was chunky teen years, chunky young woman years. And then I got married, went to England with my first husband, who was British, lived in Cambridge, England, and in London, all around the area for several years. And I was hit by a drunk driver, and it broke my back. I was on a two-year wait for an MRI. That's just a diagnostic MRI. And that's the way socialized medicine worked in England at that time. You got on a waiting list. And the surgical waiting list would have been even longer, several years. So I was in blinding agony, couldn't walk, and my doctor said, you're American, go home. They'll give you an operation. If you don't get it, you'll be paralyzed for life. By the time we did get back to America, I was paralyzed, and I stayed paralyzed despite surgery for about 3 years completely from the waist down, just dragging myself around on a walker, but my lower limbs were not functional. And when you've got that kind of thing going on in your body, you gain a lot of weight, because there's not much to do but hang out in bed, eat, and watch Oprah, and read. I did a lot of reading. but I gained this megaton of weight. I gained about 150 pounds. And
wow, that's a chunk.
That's a chunk, yeah. It's a big chunk. And losing it was always the hardest thing in the world to do. So I took on a personality, and I want you guys to look at your personality of me as a fat individual, or whatever words you use to code that, overweight, fat, chunky, chubby, fleshy, whatever words that you use.
You know, I wanted to say something here because I think this also goes for people who have eating disorders as well, mm-hmm. and who feel that they are fat, no matter what they look like in the mirror, that you'll never be, what do we say, skinny enough, rich enough, or sexy enough, you know, and that enough thing. We're really not just talking about fat, although I really want Marianne to share her thing. We're really talking about how we feel internally about ourselves,
mm-hmm.
you know, that we feel sluggy, fat, you know, carrying the weight of the world, whatever it is, you know, that you're carrying too much weight on some level that's making you feel inferior.
Exactly. That's exactly where I was going, Gritesh.
Okay.
So when we look at ourselves and how we code our, and when I say code, one of the things that I'm known for is decoding the way that the brain, the human brain, encodes events, situations, and emotions around what we're doing, our behaviors. So to decode this wrong-headedness that a lot of us have, I certainly had, around losing weight, we first have to look at how we're encoding it. And so when you think of those words that you use to describe yourself as that fat, chubby, chunky, whatever those words are, just think about that and get a feeling, a sense in your body. How does that feel to you? Most people, particularly if you're on this call, are not going to feel terribly good. Maybe you have a queasy feeling in your gut. Maybe you feel hunched over, like you're, you know, if you persecute someone, how they hunch over, they hunch their shoulders. Maybe you start having a headache or some kind of feeling usually manifests. I just want you to look at the feeling and ask yourself if it's necessary to feel that way. Now, in cases where Gitteritesh mentioned body dysmorphic disorders, which is a fancy way of 30 years of psychologist, I'm going to throw a term out there a time or two, so I will take the liberty of explaining it. These are things like anorexia, bulimia, bulimorexia, and those disorders where people think they look radically different than they actually do. I just want to say that I'm not addressing those here, and I know that folks with things like that going on in their lives tend to have real different perceptions of themselves. What I'm talking about here is most of, you know, the 92% of you in the audience that don't have those things going on. So is it necessary for you to feel this way anymore? Is it necessary for you to beat down on yourself? Is it necessary for you to feel less than, inferior, and not a woman? Or not a fill in the blank? And if your answer to that is no, or if you could choose right now for that answer to be no, that I don't need to feel this way anymore, I'd just like you to go ahead and take a very deep breath. And when you breathe out, release that all. Uncreate, dissolve, and release that all. And I know that Guru Tej is famous for these awesome breathing exercises. The lion breath would be great.
And dragon breath and all sorts of them. You're totally right. You know, it's like when you're talking about breathing these things out, it sounds so easy, doesn't it? Just breathe it out. Just let it go. You know, just, I remember my teacher used to say, just take it up to the top of, what is that really big building that you all talk about? You know, he was talking about the Empire State Building. And he said, just drop it off there. In other words, like, let it go. And what let it go means is realize that it isn't yours anymore to drag around.
And
this,
that's a good
concept.
Point. This is another great question to ask. And particularly when I first started working on this, I started work with my mother. All those things, I had the sweetest saint of a mother you could ever hope for, but she had a lot of baggage around weight, and she passed that baggage to me, and it's like a virus. We get a virus in our head about all this stuff that comes to us from the authority figures in our life. So mom, dad, whoever that was for you, ask yourself, is this mine? Who did this come from is another thing you can ask. And asking, by the way, without really needing to know the answer, you can put a hand on your stomach and a hand on your heart, heart and hara. Breathe in and say, is this mine? And you will get a definite feeling, I promise you. I don't think so. Or, I cop to it, this is mine.
And you know what's so beautiful about that, too, is that what you're talking about is what I call mantras. Everybody's got them. When you say mantras to people, they're like, oh, that's so weird. You know, that means something I don't understand. But you're talking about mantras that have been passed down to us.
Mm-hmm.
And
they don't have any positive
in.
Mantras.
No, they can be whatever they are, and they are passed down to us on a subconscious level of, you know, this is the only way to be. This is the only right thing. You know that this is the only thing that needs to happen. Like, you just have to do this, and this will happen. And if you don't do this, this is going to happen. So there's all these things that were said to us, that were said around us, you know, throughout our life. Mm-hmm. And the biggest thing to do is what Miriam is saying is, like, a really good thing. And then don't blame. Because those people didn't know any better either.
Absolutely.
They just were passing on the information that they were given or that they, you know, found along the way that seemed to be really, really good and effective in that moment. And they were giving the best of what they could do. But once you realize it, you can let it go and it will leave your DNA. You know, science has done such an amazing thing where they've actually now found that we have these little rivulets in our brain, right? That's nothing new, except that when you have a habit, it creates a rivulet in your brain. When you no longer feed or pay attention to that habit and you do something else, that rivulet closes up and you create another one. So we can change those pathways in our brain anytime we want by not feeding them. So blame is a great feeder. I'm fat because, you know, it was horrendous. I remember when I was growing up, people would
Mom's
say,
fault. She made all that cheesecake.
It's hereditary.
Hereditary.
Really?
So let me just debunk that one. quote unquote hereditary weight gain is a valid concern in less than 9% of the population where there is an actual genetic predisposition towards a disease process that has at its as a side effect weight gain. So less than 9%. Chances are it ain't you.
Yeah, that is totally the truth. It's like usually it has to do something with what goes in that little beautiful hole we call the gyangufa, the mouth, and how
and
much you're willing to work
moving,
with,
the
moving of the beautiful body,
the
right? Yes.
Yeah. So if I may continue on that thread, and that's a great thread to pick up. There are two components to why we get fat that are major, and one of the things that society has focused on over much is food. What you eat, when you eat, how much you eat, do you supplement your diet, do you take these vitamins, that vitamin, do you eat this at a certain time of day? I'm going to just leave all that onto the side because I think there's enough reasonable information out there about how to feed yourself. What I'd like to look at also is how are you using that fuel you put in? If you're using it on the couch all day, then that fuel, we put it in the tank, and you know how when you put something solid in a tank, over time it can kind of solidify into the corners? That's what it does on your ass.
And it doesn't have to be on the couch. It could be in front of your computer. It could be sitting
in
your car driving your kids around.
That's right. That's right.
It's not just the couch thing.
One thing to look at is how often this is something I looked at, is how often I was taking the car to go on short hops. If I was taking the car to go less than a mile or two, this is one thing I did personally, is I stopped doing that. I got a bunch of recyclable shopping bags, a fanny pack, stuffed those in the fanny pack, and went shopping on my feet. That's something that got me really started liquidizing a lot of this fat that was on my body. But back to when we fall off the wagon, because I think it's important to look at this from those two axes, what we eat and if and how we're moving. So during December, going back a little further, for my 50th birthday last year, I went to Paris. I went by myself. I told my husband, this is a me thing, and I very understanding guy, and I met friends over the internet that I subsequently met in Paris. I had a great time. That volcano kept me in town for another half a month, but that was okay because if you got to get stranded, let's face it, Paris is the place to be stranded. but it's not an easy place to get around, and let's be honest, Parisians drive like maniacs. You could not get me in a car outside of a taxi in that place. It was just really horrendous. So what do? You walk. And I ended up walking a darn sight more than I ever would previously just going throughout my average everyday week. You had to walk out. The refrigerators are extremely small. There are no deep freezes. You don't really have the gigantic, like my parents had this gigantic, looked like a coffin. It looked like a coffin for Frankenstein. I mean, it was a gigantic deep freeze full of everything. And they don't have those. You get a tiny little, kind of freezer box you can at best keep a pint of ice cream in and some ice cubes. So you're looking at buying fresh food every day pretty much. And that's a European way of life. I happen to think it's an extremely healthy one. It's one that my family and I have adopted. And because when I was in Paris, everybody says, oh, you're going to gain so much weight. Oh, my God, you're going to gain a lot. I lost 10 pounds. 10 pounds. In Paris, month and a half, 10 pounds. Now, how I did that, everybody's dying to know how I did that. One of the things that I did, and I did this long before I went to Paris, is I went gluten-free. This may or may not be for you. What we do know is that gluten, by the way, is the elasticy protein that is in wheat. It's an elastic that makes bread puff up in the oven and makes those nice little holes in the bread. That's what gluten is. And unfortunately, it's not digestible. It's indigestible. So your body, if you're even faintly allergic to it, and I'm kind of at a medium-grade allergic, there is a disease called celiac disease where people are fatally allergic to wheat, and it's wheat, rye, oats, barley, most of our main grains. Now, people who are gluten-free can have rice, quinoa, teff, amaranth, those kind of ancient grains, and the grass seeds. Rice is a grass seed, and most of those are grass seeds. So you can have that, no gluten, no problem. There are plenty of crackers, cookies, breads now that are made gluten-free that it's so much easier than when I first started. But I tell you, my chiropractor said, you know, I think you may have a gluten allergy. You might want to try just going off bread and cookies and pasta for a few weeks. I did that. I lost 6 inches on my abdomen immediately. Within about a month, month and a half, I had lost 20 pounds, which for a month, six weeks, is just, they will tell you it's impossible, you can't do it. And it wasn't water weight. It was mixed water and fat. The weight on the abdomen, the inches on the abdomen, when you eat gluten and you're allergic to it, you bloat. So that was my body returning to normal. After that, my body could metabolize the food it was given after it got over the shock of being inflamed for, you know, 20, 30 years. Then it could metabolize food better. So that's one thing I offer you as a, you might want to look at that. And
I have to say now, it's so easy now. I mean, compared to what it was, because I've been gluten-free for years, and the same thing as when I started, it was like you were hard. I've probably been 10 years, and it was like you were hard pressed to find. And the stuff you did find was not very good. Now it's like it's easy. It's good. Every, you know, there's restaurants that cater to celiac people so that you don't have any problem. I mean, there's really, you know, if you live in some small town in the Midwest, it's going to be a little more challenging. But we have the internet.
But there are gourmet blogs, glutenfreegirl.com is one I recommend. She's got several cookbooks out. There's celiac, C-E-L-I-A-C.org. You can go to find out about the disease itself and what to avoid. But there's wheat in a lot of things you wouldn't think of, like soy sauce. Who'd have thunk it, right? It's there.
Right,
but
yeah, same thing.
You can get soy sauce with that. So anyway, that's one thing I just...
Make a wheat-free soy sauce. There are wheat-free soy sauces, yes.
Sanjay, mm-hmm. Silver Label. but anyway, I don't want to get too much into that. Just to offer this as something that has worked for me. I've seen it work just crazy, crazy weight loss and effortless. This is where it becomes effortless. When you take away the one impediment, and I realize now that this gluten allergy was the one impediment I really had to losing weight and to making a permanent weight loss making permanent weight loss my way of life. So that gone.
And I can hear people out there going, no, I have to give up bread and pasta. I can't do it.
But you don't, not anymore.
That's right.
You don't. There are breads and pasta that taste just exactly the same. I recommend UDI, Udi's bread.
Udi.
Awesome stuff. Anyway, there's that component. So you might want to look and have a nutritional analysis done on, you know, what component you might need to look at. But so assuming you all have this, all your ducks in a row, we still sometimes fall off the wagon. I want to tell a little tale out of school on myself. This December, so I lost this massive amount of weight, you know, in, you know, 10 pounds in Paris, and then I lost another 15 pounds over the year, and then preceding that, so that was like, you know, up to April, and then I lost another 20, 25. Anyway, I came out at the end of the year, and in December I had gum surgery. I had jaw surgery, and it was fairly major in and of the fact that I was not allowed to put my head below my breast level. So I was not allowed to bend over, so my daily yoga couldn't do it. My walking, where I'm walking and puffing up a hill, couldn't do it. They didn't want blood to rush into my face because that could have compromised the stitches. So for an entire month, I had to basically just hang around the house. They didn't want me driving. They didn't want me shopping. This was the holiday season. So we don't make, we just don't have fattening food in my house. But nonetheless, just eating normally and not exercising, I gained 9 pounds. And I was like, oh, man, because it just so shattered my record. I was so bummed. I came to the end of into 2010 and weighed myself, and I was shattered. I thought, well, I'm not eating rich stuff. I'm not eating the Christmas cake and candies and stuff that tends to be around, so I should be okay. But no, I gained 9 pounds back, and I wanted to I wanted to put a real fast burn on it and lose it. And the first thing that I thought about doing is, well, I should do a crash diet. And then I thought 10 seconds after that, what are you, nuts? So this is real old programming and old thinking. Crash diets don't work. I think we all know that by now. But there may be some old programming and old thinking in there. So if you have old programming, old ways of doing stuff, and maybe it really did work for you, maybe you lost 10 pounds in 2 weeks, but then it came back on because, as we know, either it's water weight or those things, you know, those things just don't tend to work over long term. So if there's
I think it's the whole deprivation, and then once you get out of the deprivation tank, all you want is that which has been taken away from you.
You tip over into too much self-service.
Yes, and so the one thing that I always say is, it's like, if you keep asking yourself, not what are you giving up or what do you, can't you have anymore, but what is it that you want? And going toward that which you really want. So if you really want, it was so interesting, this airline stewardess my last flight to London, she said to me, okay, you're not eating any of the plain food. I can see that. So talk to me about why and what you're doing. I said, well, because it's not food, number one. And she talked to me then and said, I really want to be a size 2. Well, she was probably a size 14. And she said, and I know that it's the caffeine and the sugar that's making me do this, that's making me put on all this weight and being in the air all this time. The knowingness really helps. And I said, how much do you want to be a size 2? She said, a lot. I said, then that's what you have to remember. Every time you want to eat something, go towards that which you want. Say, does this serve what it is that I say that I want? Or is this just serving those little taste buds in my tongue?
So whatever it is that you want, I'll bet for all of us that would include feeling good.
I think most people really would like to feel good.
There are a couple of folks in the woodpile that really want to feel bad, and I'm not addressing you either.
Right.
We're only addressing the kind of the 92% of you that are mostly in the fold of we want to feel good. So the whatever else it is you want, Guru Tej is very, very correct in saying, find out what you want, write it down. I'm a big fan of journaling. Write that sucker down, because if you don't, it's too easy to forget. It's too easy to blow off.
Oh,
write
yeah,
it
and put it
where
places
you
that you're going to see it. Yes.
Every day,
we say
yeah.
It together. It's true. You know, put it on by your computer. If you're sitting by your computer a lot,
steering wheel
on your car.
I'll give you a great tip. Dry erase markers, baby. Dry erase markers. Keep some in your car and some in your bathroom, because you can write on the mirror with those.
Dry erase markers. I don't know about them.
Dry erase markers. They're the markers you write on a whiteboard with.
Oh, okay.
And they're pretty cheap. They're not very expensive, a couple of bucks for two or three. And write those things that you want on your mirror where you'll see it when you brush your teeth. I find tying things to things I do in the bathroom, I mean, you can't get away from going to the bathroom every day, right? Some of us, it's 8, 10, 12 times a day. Who knows? But if you have it in the bathroom, and then at regular intervals, like every 3 to 5 days, I wipe everything off, and then I write it in a different place. If you have that one Post-it that's been up there since 1982,
you're not reading it anymore.
It's
become part of the
it's
scenery.
Invisible. It's completely invisible.
It is totally invisible. Yeah.
So make a habit of you know, every 3 or 4 days, wipe that thing off and write it in. Maybe write it in a different way. But
or
keep your
color.
Goals in mind.
Keep
those
different color.
What I want out in front of you. I'm sorry, Guru.
I said use a different color.
Use a different color. That's why I recommend the dry erase. You can get a whole rainbow of markers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I also do this on my, like if it's something really quick, I put it on my car, my internal mirror in the car, or just a really big note, you know, pick up milk or you know whatever on my windshield on the interior, and then you can wipe it away with a tissue. Anyway, rolling forward, the next thing I thought in my misguided series of thinking about how to lose weight really fast, and oh my God, I don't want this extra 9 pounds. I just worked so hard to lose. I thought, well, I'm going to go join a gym. And then 10 seconds after that, I'm like, what are you, nuts? Because I know that I hate gyms. They're stinky. They're full of really desperate people. And the entire tone of the gyms that I've been in has been something between meat market and feeder cattle pen, which is neither of which is too attractive, honestly. You get a lot of people that are pushing themselves to the limit, and they're huffing and they're puffing, and they're absolutely desperate to lose that last several pounds or whatever it is. And that whole desperation feeling, I work with energy like Gurdjieff in a little different way, though. The energy of desperation will infect your soul if you are around it. Same thing if you go into a terminal ward in the hospital. That energy will pull you down.
Well, I think that's a really big thing, a really big thing for, you know, making sure that your magnetic field is charged when you go into those places. Because if you really love gyms and they really work for you, and there's some gyms, you're right, about 90% of gyms are like that. And then there's some that are really wonderful and have great classes. And,
if it's working for you, your yoga classes,
in the gym, and you're like, no, she's telling me don't go to the gym. She's not telling you don't go to the gym. She's telling you there are other options, or pay attention to the gym that you go to. And tune in, is this the right place for you? You know, meaning, will this work your whole being, not just your body? Will it feed you on many levels?
So let me give you a quick cure for some of this. And Gurdjieff mentioned, make sure you're in magnetic alignment. Here's a way that you can zip up, it's called the zip up, your meridians, your energy meridians that run all around your body. This is from acupuncture and acupressure. You can use your fingers to do this and put your fingers on your pubic bone and draw a line straight up the center of your body and straight up your neck, and then tap your chin gently. And then do that another time, straight from the pubic bone, straight up the center, like you're dividing yourself in half, and tap your chin gently. And one more time, zip up. It's like you're zipping a cat suit zipper, and then tap your chin gently. Okay, that's the front, but we have a back, right? And one of the places that negative or misqualified energy can enter us most readily is at our backs, because why? We're not aware of it. We're not aware of the backs of our bodies as much as we are aware of the front of our bodies. Sociologists will tell you that humans are anteriorly related. And what does that mean? That means we really think about our fronts. You know, we style the front of our hair. We're not so worried about the back. So be sure you zip your back up. And you're going to do this by putting your hand, either hand, by the way, is fine, on your sacrum. That's the bottom bone on your back. So just touch your sacrum, and you're going to have to kind of screw your arm around a little bit to do this. We're going to draw a line straight up the spine, and you're going to reach a point where you can't go up anymore. So you're just going to take your hand, and you're going to reach up, just like you're reaching for that zipper in the dress, right? And just reach down as far as you go with your intention. Reach down and hook that piece of energy and pull it up over the top of your head, down through your nose, right through the center of your nose, and down to the top lip, and give your top lip a little tap. So do that again. Let's go back to the sacrum, draw the energy up as far as you can, then reach up, grab that zipper, and draw it up the spine over the top of the head, down the forehead, down the nose, and tap the top lip. One more time. From the sacrum, up the back, around the top of the head, forehead, through the nose, and tap the top lip. Now you notice you're zipped up from the front and you're zipped up from the back. What's the only hole in the thing? Well, other than your root chakra below, which is considered always, we don't ever zip that closed. Your root chakra is open and your mouth is open. So be careful what you inhale. This is a little joke my Qigong master used to tell us. Be careful what you inhale. Ha, 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 ha. So when you are in an environment like that, it really helps if you zip up before you go in to a place where people are desperate, particularly if they're pushing themselves to a pain point and injuring. The other thing is, like, I decided I really don't like gyms. I just don't like pushing myself. I don't like the equipment. I go to yoga at a studio, so it's not a gym. You know, I don't do that in a gym situation. But what I really love is dancing. I love my yoga. I love hiking in the redwoods. I'd almost pay to get out of work to hike in the redwoods. So I started
I think
doing
that
that.
that's so much a part of it is like find out what you love and do that. Don't try to do something that somebody else is telling you you should do because it's so good and you lose so much weight. Find out what you love, and then I'm going to say something else with that. Get a partner to do it with because if you're just really trying to create something, sometimes doing it by yourself, you're really good at that, and 90% of people are not so good at doing it by themselves. So get somebody you really enjoy being with and get them to take that dance class with you or go to yoga class or, you know, join the gym or go swimming or, you know, a bike club or whatever it is that you want to do because it will really help you. And then you set up times of the week and you're accountable not only to yourself, but to someone else you care about. And it
Now,
just helps keep you on track.
can I put a rider on that?
Yeah.
This is for, I want to take this even further because this is for those times when we really especially fall off the wagon. Sometimes our gym partner or our dance partner or whoever can't make it, or they go to their grandma's for Christmas vacation and we're all alone for 3 weeks. Oh my God, what am I going to do now? So that's why we're telling you find something you love. Not find something you, the brain, loves. I'm going to tell you to just take your head, unscrew your head, and leave it at the door. Your body is the one doing the talking here. So you may have to try a number of different things. I had had a yoga practice since I was 17, but since my back blew out, all my doctors were telling me, don't do yoga, that'll just inflame your back, which was stupid, but nonetheless. And I had to really find out that I did love that. Yeah, I remember. And oh God, child's pose feels so good. And there are certain places, like my down dog is one of the most blissful places this body can be. It cries to go into down dog. I've woken up out of a sound sleep. The body has walked over to the mat, which is always unfurled and on the floor ready. And down dog, I'm still deeply asleep. I wake up a couple of minutes later, and I find myself on my mat. That's how much this body loves yoga. So that's what you're looking for. That's what you're looking for. And if you have something else in your life right now that you love, 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 and maybe it's that Godiva chocolate, you know, or maybe it's your mom's apple pie, and it's a food thing. And you love, 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 love that, then find the equivalent thing that your body, see, that's something your tongue loves. And that's something that your memories love. This is something the child inside you that's 4 years old loves. So what you're doing now is you're finding out what the adult you loves, and you're finding out what the body just adores, can't live without. I think one thing that everybody, if you just try it, give it a chance. One thing we all bodies love is stretching. It doesn't have to be formalized yoga, but to stretch out where you feel cramped, lean to the other side, stretch that out. Give your body a chance to expand, open, and breathe fully. If you're sitting cramped at a desk all day, like most people do, you're not able to really breathe freely. One of the challenges in my life was getting my shoulder blades back onto my back and out of my ear sockets.
Yeah, and you know, just I keep my yoga mat right by my desk just for that purpose. So if you're spending a lot of time at your desk, put your yoga mat close to your desk and close to a wall, and there's all sorts of things that you can do close to the wall. And thank God for YouTube. There's so many things it can show you. And on my channel on YouTube, The Energy Gurus, there's a bunch of things you can do right by your desk that will just change your energetic being. And I want to say one more thing about what you were saying, which is so great, is remember, if you exercise and you do the things that you love, you will lose weight. And that allows you not to eat a whole pie or even a half of it, but to have that really thin slice of that pie that you really love and savor it. you eat slowly and lovingly and you really just cherish the taste of it, you'll find that we don't need these big, humongous helpings of things. We just need to be present with it.
And when your buddy is gone over Christmas vacation, then you're not stuck for, oh my gosh, I don't have anybody to help me, to help motivate me. Your body is going to motivate. Your body's going to say, you know, I remember when we stretched the side of the waist, oh boy, that felt like nothing else. So when you have the cravings, I want to specifically address this to cravings. Something that I do about cravings is I eat whatever I want. By and large, anything I want today is fair game. I don't say no to anything. But I ask my body, you know, if I'm like going, oh my God, chocolate, 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 I'll ask my body, what would also be delicious for you? What would be delicious for the body to do? Some reggae might get turned on and I might dance. Or I might decide to do some yoga or Pilates, or I might go walk around the neighborhood or whatever else. And then I come back and I eat the apple pie or the chocolate or whatever it is, and then I find myself having that one bite and it not being a hardship. My husband is terminally frustrated because I buy a chocolate ice cream, I have one spoon, and I stick it in the freezer for 3 months. He can't cope with the idea of that there's chocolate ice cream and you're not eating it. It's going to waste. I said, it's in the freezer. Let it be. How do you just eat one spoon at a time? So this is that, but that's how. That really is how. I let my body have its way. Because what's happening when we have cravings is that there is something in our life that's not going right.
Mm-hmm.
And we get those tugs from childhood. Oh, a slice of mom's apple pie had fixed the whole thing. You know, I just broke up with my boyfriend. Get out the Haagen-Dazs. That used to be the cardinal, you know, the sound of the weekend is here in my college dorm. Somebody broke up with their boyfriend, and we had a stash of Haagen-Dazs in the dorm freezer. So if that's how, and particularly if that's how you spent your young adult years, you have a program in there that is preset to kick off
mm-hmm.
anytime something feels like that ever again.
Right. As opposed to realizing that each one of these things that come up and try to talk to us, what Marianne is talking about is the body intelligence, is when these things come in our lives, whether you break up with someone or you have a sick child or you have a challenge with, you know, somebody in your family or someone you love, or you've just had a really bad interaction at work, it doesn't really matter. If you actually allow yourself to breathe, and I'm going to give you a very specific breath, you'll find that all of a sudden you can just sit and be with that and understand that inside that, you have a lot of wisdom around that, but the panic will overtake the wisdom, and the panic is what kicks off the destructive behavior that allows us to want to eat, to keep the feeling down. But really the feeling is a notification of that there's inner wisdom inside underneath that that really wants to come forward. So what I'm going to suggest is this really simple breath. You're going to sip it in. It's just called a sipping breath, really. And you're going to just act like just sip the breath into your mouth. And so just go. You don't even have to make your breath like a straw. Just like open your mouth a little bit, sip in, and then exhale through the nose. Just if you feel like you can't get anything out your nose, then just exhale out the mouth and go. Two more times. Try that.
And that always makes me, that always gets me real stoned real fast. I can't remember where I was, who I am, where I'm going to. What doing this kind of breathing does for you any pattern of breathing that you like, but differing your pattern of breathing, and this is a really good one. It's simple. I like simple.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it inserts a break, what's called a break state. So you're in
a
state.
I call them interrupters, yes.
Yeah, it's an interrupter, exactly. That's an, exactly. So you're in a certain state of mind when you're into your craving and got to have the piece of pie kind of thing. And what you need is just somebody to throw the breaker switch on that to turn it off. And that's what this breathing pattern, breathing differently, does. So the challenge is for you to insert an awareness, a piece of awareness in there that the breathing needs to be engaged. And you can do that by consistently asking your body what would be delicious for it to do right now. What would be delicious for it to do right now? And anytime you have an ache or a pain, ditto, what would be delicious right now? And then just go ahead and do it. I mean, provided it's not illegal. But, you know, and then go ahead and do it. And then ask yourself, do I really want the chocolate? Oh, yeah, I still do. And then have the chocolate, but have one square. And for me, and I was, I'll cop to this too, back in the day, I could honk down a whole big, huge, king-size bag of M&Ms in one sitting and not even look twice. And
wow.
think about ice cream after that. You know, yeah, really. So it's not like I have not been there. But
no, can I just stop you 1 second to say that that's a really, really beautiful thing? Because what you're really talking to is that when we're having these things that are non-food items, they actually do not trigger the body to know that it's full. There's nothing in there that is a food-grade quality that allows the body to go, oh, I've just had food. Okay, I'm full. So there's no cessation of fullness.
Mm-hmm. No fiber, no water in something that's concentrated like chocolate. It's a protein, but it's so highly concentrated and so adulterated with white sugar, and particularly like the M&Ms that I was eating, that the body does not recognize it as a food. So, yeah, you're absolutely correct. But I could have, you know, easily filled up to the point my stomach was in danger of bursting, and I would still be thinking about more. And that's when that interior piece that, you know, the four-year-old that's triggered is in need of comfort and sustenance. So let's look at that for 1 second. And this is a little bit complex to go into on a call like this, but let me give you a tool. What's happening when you have the craving is this very young piece of you is waking up and saying, wait, I felt like that once before. I felt betrayed, I felt shamed, I felt guilty, I felt whatever the feeling is. And what did I do before that made it feel better? Mom gave me a piece of pie. So I need a piece of, this is a very simple, not very intelligent piece of us that makes a logical leap that was appropriate at a certain place and time in our lives. And it got codified into a sanctioned behavior. Feeling like this comes in, okay, here's the sanctioned behavior set for that feeling to ameliorate that feeling, to end the feeling badly. So how we retrain ourselves is simply keep asking again and again, is this mine? And if it's not, give it back to whomever. If it's your mom's or, you know, one of those authority figures we grew up with, and you can hear them saying this, like I can hear my mom so many times saying, if I eat that, I'll be big as a house. And so I can hear the big as a house echoing in my mind. And what I did was I decontaminated that big as a house using energy therapy methods that I do. And then, here's something kind of advanced, but you may want to try this. Give that other person, in this instance, it would be my mother, give that person the benefit of the healing you just received. So dedicate the merit of the benefit of the healing also to the person who, you know, gave you the virus, so to speak. And
absolutely.
And
absolutely.
So on back in their ancestral line to however many generations that needs to go back to the first woman. back as far as it needs to be. And send that healing back in time. And then,
go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
When you send the healing back in time and back through all the generations and anybody connected with this family and its members, you know, and you're sending it out really to the entire world at that point because we're all connected. When you do that, several things are going to happen. First of all, you're going to bust the craving cycle in yourself. Second of all, you're going to decontaminate those words and phrases that are used by your mind to make you feel bad about yourself for cheating, quote unquote. And can we get rid of that word, please? We're not cheating. We're using a substance for a desired purpose. Was valid back then, isn't anymore. So you're decontaminating that behavior pattern. And then another thing that you get, incidentally, is a lot of the time, whoever that person was in your life, if they're still around, will come to you and give you the most amazing messages of love and support, just absolutely unbidden. So you get blessings like you wouldn't believe.
Because we're all really connected. We are energetic beings that are connected. And this is just such a great proof of connection, what you're talking about, Miriam, and that, you know, we have to think in terms of, you know, lineage and legacy. Do we want this for the next generations to have these same patterns that we've struggled with?
Another thing that I actually heard in yoga class this morning was that a little anecdote the yoga teacher told, but the essence of which is when you mess up, cop to messing up to your kids. Say, oh, kids, you know, hey, mom made a mistake. I don't really
Absolutely.
Want to tell you big as a house because that's not really relevant to anything. What I want to tell you is, and then a positive message about eating the right food or something like that. But when you acknowledge that you've made a mistake in front of your kids and you tell them, even to telling them, you know, because my mom told me this, it caused me to overeat, it caused me to be, you know, inactive, it caused me to be this, that, and the other. So, I mean, you know, they're looking
at
that.
It's what I call turning the ship around.
Well, yeah, and they're seeing mom or dad or being in integrity, even more important.
Absolutely.
Your integrity,
and you're turning,
is that important?
You're changing the wheels of how the whole, you know, ship moves into the future. We call that relationships. It's a ship.
And it breeds intelligent, creative, and integrity-driven kids.
It really does. So we just have a couple more minutes left here. We did a whole hour. We were going to do 45 minutes. We did a whole hour, Miriam. So you have one more thing
more
that you want to say.
I know. Well, last thing I want to say is, again, I personally, just because of my, you know, how my brain is wired, I work better by myself. So we're telling you, get a partner, and it's good to have a partner. And I love it when I have partner yoga is awesome. But if you don't, or if you live in a place where you just aren't close to somebody, there are a lot of online areas now where weight loss buddies are easy to find. And your weight loss buddy may be in Timbuktu, but you email each other every day. Maybe you call each other on Skype, something like that. And that's a real easy way to connect. Another one is meetup.com. Meetup.com, they have a lot of different, you know, just women support groups and, you know, just a lot of different kind of things that you can meet up with people with your same interests. So if you're having trouble, like Guru Tej was saying, if you're living out in the boondocks somewhere, know that there are places that you can go online to get the kind of partnership that you need. And if you're a lone wolf like me, you tend to kick it better doing your own thing. By all means, do your own thing, but make your body your partner.
Yes.
And no matter
and
what.
And I think that, you know, the whole thing that you said about, you know, in meet-up and places like that, they can tell you things that are in your neighborhood that you don't even know about.
Exactly.
You don't even know that exist.
Very true, very true.
So it's, you know, we really want you to have the tools to do this and the support. So Miriam's website is, I'm going to let her spell it for you because she actually does it slower than I do, but it's MiriamWebster.com, and she will spell it.
MariamWebster, as in Michael, WebSter, And I have a community for evolutionary leadership. If you are a coach, a trainer, a leader of any kind in state, local, national government, we are talking about how to lead people where it's an empowerment rather than a by-the-nose thing, and how to empower in the entire world to step into the new world of the future.
Well, I do, and thank you. And you know, you can find me at gurutej.com. That's GURUTEJ.com. And this whole consciousness of get your skinny back is really to get your essence back. And we want you to be the most empowered beings on the planet, and it's the most selfish thing in the world, because the more empowered you are, the more empowered we are, the more empowered the entire planet is, because we power each other or we disempower each other. I'm for power.
Selfish,
I'm for connection.
Kind of
all right.
Good.
Thank you so much, Miriam. Thank you all
for
being here, and thank you for sharing this with your friends, because this information is so important for everyone right now. Bless you. Thank you.
Thank you.
And
bye-bye.